state pre-record today, and we are really fortunate to have a playwright with us who's doing some important work that will be coming to Central Illinois, and I guess probably since it's streaming around the country, we are joined by Paula Kamen, the writer, author of the play Jane, which will be coming up soon through the Coalescence Theater Project based out of Bloomington. Welcome to see you at the show, Paula.
Well, hi, great to be here.
So Paula, you are not a stranger to this Champaign, Illinois community. Tell us a little bit about your time at the University of Illinois.
Yes, yeah, I was there from 1985 to 1989, and I found a good home at Allen Hall and then also at the Daily Illini. So I was just there in the spring where they had the Illini Media Hall of Fame. So I saw the huge new apartment buildings at Green Street. It looked like a whole different place.
No, it does not look like our University of Illinois of the late 1980s, that's for sure. And not even a Garcia's presence anymore.
Oh, so yes.
Things have really changed.
Yes.
So were you inducted into the Hall of Fame, or were you just there for a presentation of somebody else?
Yes, I was inducted. That was the honor of a lifetime. So, yeah,
wow.
Yeah, with about 19 or 20 other people, both living and non-living.
Wow, congratulations. I'm sure that's some very elite company. What sort of things did you write about when you were working for DI?
Thanks. Yes, I should say in the class before me, I'm inducted, was Q Hefner, Roger Ebert, but then, yeah, I was in the second class. So, huge variety of different people. I covered women's issues for the Daily Illini as a columnist, and that's actually where I got interested in writing about all this, and then got up the courage yet to speak out and take a stand in public, which is not easy. Especially then, that was before the internet, where especially as a woman, where you're trying to please everybody all the time, or you're brought up to please everybody all the time, to state an opinion that might get some blowback, and that was a scary thing. So that was good basic training for the outside world of the Daily Illini.
What sort of women's issues were at the forefront of things on a college campus in the late 1980s? Was there a lot of safety considerations, or what else was going on?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was like the height of the Reagan Bush years. And I don't know if it's still, it was the most Greek campus in the country. And just saying just very basic feminist views was considered very controversial. So the kind of stuff that I wrote about was just common sense. Like, they were just talking about the concept of sexual assault among people who know each other, acquaintance rape. And I wrote a column about that and the special risk at the beginning of the school year when those are reported the most. And then pretty soon I was labeled a feminist, which I had first wanted to deny, but then I looked up to see what a feminist was, and it just seemed, very common sense. And I wrote about pro-choice issues, all different things that weren't being covered elsewhere that were just, very, very common sense, nothing really that radical.
Right. Well, they were so lucky to have you then, because you were cutting edge ahead of your time. So fast forward, so after you leave the U of I, where did you go from there?
So I attended the journalism school, College of Communications. They told us to go to a small city or town to work for a daily paper. So that's what I did. I went, it was a recession, a tough job market, and I got a job at a daily paper in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't think any noteworthy national news would ever happen. It was just good basic training. And then I submitted an op-ed to the New York Times in a special column that they had for Gen X, that at that point we were like the new young thing, and then that op-ed was about the stigma of the word feminist and talked about my time at the DI and how just speaking up for these issues gets you labeled, and about the challenge of making an appeal to a broader audience. And then I got basically a book deal, and I wrote a book at 24 about young women and their views of feminism and overcoming a lot of their hesitations about it.
Was that all in my head?
Or that was called Feminist Fatale. That came out in 1991.
Okay.
And then after that was Her Way, about young women's sexual attitudes. It sort of grew right out of the first one. And then the third book was All in My Head, about chronic pain and women. And then the last book was related to Champaign Urbana. It was about my friend Iris Chang, who became a best-selling author. She wrote The Rape of Nanking, and then she mysteriously committed suicide. And the book was me trying to find out what happened, because she was the most envied person that I knew and seemed to have the most going on of anybody. So that play also was about women's health issues, specifically about mental illness and the stigma of getting treatment for mental illness.
So when did you first decide to write a play? How did that enter into this body of work that you created?
Well, I started off with a degree in journalism, and then in the early 90s, someone asked me to write a play for them. And I just found out about the existence of this underground feminist network from the early 70s in Chicago called Jane. And at that point, there was almost nothing written about them. And I was very curious to investigate and find out about it. And I decided to make it a documentary play because my background was in journalism. And it was so unbelievable that just these housewives and grad students ran this major underground abortion service out of apartments in Chicago for several years, and did over 10,000 abortions on people from every walk of life. And it was just so unbelievable that I thought that I would interview people and then make a play out of the transcripts. So with the journalism skills, where we're not afraid to call people up and bother them, that came in handy, and found my main contribution was I took out ads in the Chicago Defender, which is the black, historically black paper in Chicago, and then in the Tribune. And I got people who used Jane, which was my biggest contribution. Those were the hardest to find because it was illegal. And unlike the Jane members, they often didn't have any political agenda to want to speak out. So to make a long story short.
How did you convince people to speak, since it is such a hard subject to speak on?
Yeah, it was very difficult. Even a lot of the Jane members didn't want to speak out about it because it was such a, one of the main people who ran Jane, Jody Parsons, I had to be most persistent with her. And then I found out later, just what a toll of leading Jane had taken on her. So I can see why she didn't want to talk to me. It was very stressful dealing with so many people's pain and a lot of anxiety where you're risking jail. A lot of people wanted to move on with their lives, or they had bigger jobs. There's some people who still wouldn't talk to me. Like there was someone who became a doctor that didn't want to talk to me. You're talking about something illegal that she had done. So it just took a lot of persistence, and then being able to take no for an answer also.
So the play opened in Chicago in 1999, but what period of time was this research? When was that going on?
Yeah, mainly in the early mid 90s and a little bit of, I guess through the 90s. And I also did a lot of rewrites in the later 90s, adding fictionalized scenes because it was too intense with just the interview transcripts, that I needed to have like more humor and lighter moments and just basic dramatization, you know, of suspense and conflict. And so the monologues are probably about a fourth of it now, and then about three quarters of it is fictionalized scenes that I wrote. And it took a lot of playwriting classes, and it took me a while to figure out exactly how to do that. And then I've been revising it all along. So this is about the 200th draft or something that's gonna open on Friday.
Wow. And so now 23 years later, that it has a resonance and an importance that that probably led to this new interest in it. Is that how this kind of came back to the surface?
Yeah, exactly. It had a lot of when George Bush was in office, a lot of campuses put it on, and then when Obama came in, there was no interest in it at all, which is fine because the urgency of it was not there. And then when Trump got in, that's when more interest started. And we had a reading. The biggest thing is we had a celebrity reading in New York in 2019.
And Cynthia Nixon, right?
Yeah, it was some A-lister names. So that was the highlight of the theater career. And that was incredible to see these really amazing actors. They're all really amazing actors who did the play, but like a Tony Award winning actor play that part of Jody, who I mentioned, one of the leaders of Jane. And then in June of this year, I suddenly got about six or seven requests for production just without me even sending it out to anybody, just people Googling and finding it. And there was also a documentary on HBO that got released on HBO in June about Jane, and I contributed some research to it, but that helped to make it more of a household word. That before, when I was telling people about it, it just seemed so way out, this underground feminist abortion service. So when people see on HBO, it made it more common knowledge of what it was.
Yeah. So when you were writing this, I'm sure, did it feel like you were explaining history, but did you feel any worry that we would end up where we are right now? Because I know me personally, I felt I maybe took it for granted that we had moved past this and that we were at a point where certain rights for people with uteruses were going to stay our rights. And now it's obviously not the case. So when you were writing this, did you feel that it was something that was tenuous that could go away? Or did you kind of feel like this was just a piece of history that you wanted people to know about?
Yeah, I felt like there was a risk, or there were just more and more and more restrictions happening all the time, mm-hmm. where it's being chipped away at. So the number of providers was going down steadily. And but I guess no one really believes that until it actually happens, because there's always a part of me that thought, even until the last minute, well, this is like 50 years of precedent. They're not gonna, that after it leaked the months before it happened, I thought, okay, they're exposed now, maybe they'll work out some compromise. But then there was no compromise. So it mm-hmm. was still a shock, even though I knew intellectually that it could happen. I guess everybody, even the ones who really were sure it would happen, it was still a shock when it does. So it's like dystopian to hear you know, the TV broadcaster say Roe v. Wade was overturned. So it's like some weird nightmarish thing coming true.
Right. Right.
Yeah, well, even just reading some of the other reviews about it and descriptions about it, it feels almost like it would be out of the Underground Railroad or out of some sort of like Nazi resistance. It's just hard to believe this is America, this is Chicago, this is,
yes, you know,
in my lifetime.
Yeah, it was an article in this week's New Yorker. I opened it up and there was a headline that said Abortion Underground. And it's like unreal reading about this group of women from Mexico smuggling pills in to Texas and red states now, and all that they're going through. So it was like reading a dystopian novel or something, reading the story of what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm, now. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it's really important that people hear people's stories of people who've actually gone through it, gone through abortions and why, because I think it's so easy. Most people probably know someone who's had an abortion, but most people don't realize that they know somebody who has, because it's still not talked about as much. You know, people go through it and then they keep that private, which is understandable. So I think the fact that you actually talk to people and you're telling some of their stories, and even if they're somewhat fictionalized, that will speak to people maybe who don't understand why someone might make that choice.
Yeah, you know, it's often missing, like in the political debates, we often hear the abortion debate in terms of a horse race, like, oh, what will this mean for Pritzker's campaign? Mm-hmm. What will this mean for Darren Bailey? You know, yeah, all the commercials you see, at least in Chicago, they discuss it in political terms, but yeah, it's sort of rare still to see the human toll it takes, just when normal people become criminals and all the anxiety and everything that happens in running something underground. So right. I wanted to show, even in the most ideal situation, which Jane was, you know, they were really smart women and they had a good safety record. It was still, for the women I interviewed who used Jane, it was still terrifying because it was illegal. And they knew these were not real doctors. It was just like someone in their 20s wearing jeans and the hair coming down over their eyes. So like doing any surgery that's, in secret like that is terrifying. So it should just show the human cost and what happens when it's illegal, that it's not just an academic, or it's not just about the political races. It's about real people's lives.
Is that scene that you just described to us of the young woman in jeans performing the abortion, is that right out of your play?
Yeah, well, there was someone that I found through a Tribune ad who actually had a negative experience with Jane, but she says at the end of the interview that she wouldn't have done it any other way and they saved her, because she said that it was still scary. Yeah, it was a very specific model. This is verbatim from her interview where she talks about coming there and seeing the woman who's going to be operating on her, wearing jeans and her hair coming down. And, and then since then, having an abortion at a MD's office, and it's just a whole different world. So she actually talks, it sounds in the monologue like she's going to condemn Jane, because she talks about how terrified she was and how where the operating place, it was like very makeshift. It was like the type that they could just pack up in 10 minutes and not lose anything. So that taken verbatim from her monologue, but at the end she says that they saved her life, that she doesn't know what she would have done without it. But even that, the best possible illegal abortion surgery, it was still traumatic in a lot of cases.
Right.
So this is someone who was a teen and wasn't political, like the Jane, all the Jane people and the more activists saw this as a political act, taking control of your body, and women helping each other. But this is just a scared teen, you know, who just doesn't have any of that consciousness or just coming to it cold. Mm-hmm. And it's being very confused by who these people were and all that.
So the event's going to be streamed on Coalescence. Was it directed in a particular way for streaming, or is it basically just going to be the play as it's intended to be done with the camera shooting it?
You know, this is very innovative. I've never even seen a play like this that Coalescence innovated during the pandemic, where they've filmed it and edited it almost like a film. So, So it's more artful than just having like one stationary camera in the audience. And they did that so it could be national and target a bigger audience. They want to have like watching parties to raise money. It's all to raise money for the biggest national abortion fund, which is WRRAP, the Women's Reproductive Rights Assistance Project. So they're based in California, but they help women all over the country access abortion pills and the procedure. So I think it's probably the biggest fund in the country that does that.
And is the production, is it all about soliciting donations for the?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, Coalescence is not getting any profit or 100% goes to this organization, to help women, on a very basic material level, seek care, which is totally in the spirit of Jane, where they also on a very, very basic material level, helped women, to overcome all these challenges.
So people listening can go onto our Facebook page and our website, see you at the show, and we will have links to both information about how to stream Jane Abortion and the Underground, but also how to donate to, do they call it RAP or do they call it WRRAP?
I think it's WRRAP. And it'll be online, or the opening is this Friday, and then it's going to be at least 6 months on the Coalescence website for people to view.
That's great.
Right. I saw that. I thought originally they were just going to have it for 1 month, and I was very excited that they're having it available for 6 months. It gives people a chance to watch it and maybe then tell other people to watch it. And that's great. And it's such a worthy cause and such an important play that you wrote. And
we
appreciate you so much and all your work. Are you working on anything else right now that we should tell our listeners about?
Oh yeah, working on a comedy and nothing to report yet. It's always what I wanted to do. Then I got into the feminist stuff at the Daily Illini. So I'm working on a comedy. I'm not sure. Yeah, just sending it out right now. I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Nice.
But more information about my books are at paulakamen.com, and that includes the one about Iris Chang, who's from Champaign-Urbana.
Right. Okay, great. We will put a link to your site as well. It's just really fascinating to hear about your journey, and it's unfortunate that we have to celebrate the timeliness of your work. But
yes,
but thank God it's there, and it's going to be comforting to some, and instructive to some, and probably shocking to some.
Yeah. So.
And I hope that our listeners, no matter like what their political viewpoints, will watch it and with an open mind and, kind of take this in. And obviously you can tell where we stand on things, but I have a lot of friends who are not on the same side of things that I am politically. And I hope that they feel comfortable. I think that's one of the nice things about it streaming, is that people maybe who wouldn't feel comfortable going to see it and having people see them there in the audience, they can watch it in their comfort of their own home and maybe with a little bit more anonymity and be able to just, you know, kind of take it in on their
good
own.
Point. That's a really good point, Linda. And I think that also the fact that this is a documentary play, you know, when it's, I think that it seems important to watch it with knowing that this is not just some out of somebody's imagination and some dystopian fantasy. This is, these are real people in a real place at a real point in time that we're again entering in our country.
Yeah, anytime you hear a monologue in the play, it's taken verbatim from their interview transcripts.
Oh, that's
and
that's
yeah, great. And I should also add that I interviewed a reverend who's since passed away, who was the head of the Illinois Clergy Consultation Service. And some of the biggest advocates for abortion rights and those in charge of the biggest networks to help women when it was illegal were the clergy. It was Protestant ministers and rabbis. And and I interviewed Reverend E. Spencer Parsons. And so he talks in the play, he has a few monologues right from his interview about why the clergy got involved and why they saw it as a part of their pastoral work.
Right.
Well, I'm looking at the cast and I'm realizing that I've acted with Trinity Carpenter before. She's in an ensemble. She, in the very first play that I ever did in 2011 at Parkland College, I was the aviator and she was the little prince.
Oh, so, wow.
Another reason for me to tune in, but it looks
definitely.
I recognize some other names. So it looks like it's Central Illinois actors predominantly.
I guess it's a coalition with two different theater companies, with Coalescence in Bloomington, Illinois, and then Cat's Cradle here in Chicago area. So there's a lot of Central Illinois people involved.
Okay, well, you couldn't have found a better partner than Don Chendro and the group of Coalescence. That they're doing a wonderful work with underserved populations all over the map. So thank you for joining us on See You at the Show. We can't wait to watch it. We'll do everything we can to make sure that other people do as well.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you again for supporting See You at the Show and spending another Thursday with us, the 20th of October, which is crazy. October is almost over. And definitely get out to see all the shows you can possibly see. Last week, we talked about a couple shows that are ending this weekend. So definitely get out to The Story at Parkland College. We talked probably not long enough about it last week to get you really excited, but it's a fast-moving, really quick, engaging show that will make you think, and it's based on a true story. So definitely go check that out. And Something Rotten in Decatur with Theater 7, and I've heard great things about that. We didn't get to see it yet, but I've heard nothing but rave reviews from, and it's a fun show with lots of great music. So you cannot go wrong. And listen again next week. Hopefully we'll have a new show. We might talk more about Jane like we did today. Thank you so much for listening, as always. Give us feedback if you can on our Facebook page or let us know personally. We love, love, love to hear from you. And if you've seen a show that we're not posting on seeyouattheshow.com, let us know so we can update that. I know we don't have some of the high school shows coming up. We will get those on there soon. And if there's anything else theater related going on that you want to talk about or you want us to talk about or cover, let us know. We appreciate everybody who's reached out to us in the past, and just keep it coming. We always love to hear from you. And we will try to continue to do new content even when we're not always in the same state. And we appreciate, as always, Parker Evans for doing our editing. And stay tuned to WFT. Enjoy.